Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehr today. Thank you to everyone who has stepped up already this morning and participated in our pledge drive. If you haven't done so already, how about taking a few minutes while Brian Lehr is out and just calling in, and he'll come back and hear all the ways and how we talked about how much we love him and what he does every single day. Welcome him back with a pledge of support to WNYC. The phone number is 888-376-9692, or you can go online at WNYC.org. But let's go back to our regular programming for now. Later on this hour, we'll start a new series on obituaries. We'll talk to the New York Times obituary editor about Dr. Joyce Brothers and her legacy in pop psychology. But first, let's look at Bangladesh and how the building collapse there is changing garment manufacturing. Is it going to be the triangle shirtwaist factory for the global clothing manufacturing industry? The Triangle Shirtwaist Fire in 1911, of course, resulted in the deaths of 146 garment workers and spurred the growth of the union movement, with a horror over the deaths of 1,100 Bangladeshi workers do the same and improve working conditions in Bangladesh and around the world. I'm joined now by Stephen Greenhouse, labor and workplace correspondent for The New York Times. He's followed this story and wrote yesterday about the deal that several large clothing retailers signed that may be a major step in that process. Welcome back to the show, Stephen Greenhouse.
Great to be here, Anna.
So the big deal is that the Swedish retailer H&M has signed on. They're a major player in the Bangladesh garment business. What exactly did they agree to do?
So not just H&M, which is the largest purchaser of apparel from Bangladesh, but Zara signed on, and Primark, a big UK firm, signed on. C&A, a big Dutch firm, signed on. Today we learned that El Corte Inglés, the Spanish retailer, and Marks & Spencer, the famous British retailer, they all signed on to this landmark plan that requires – in which the companies agreed to independent, rigorous inspections of factories. They, as part of the plan, they promise to terminate business with any factories that have violations that are not fixed, corrected fairly quickly. And most important of all, Anna, these companies that signed on agreed to help finance, underwrite the needed fire safety and building violations that many of these factories need. And one of the things that always amazes me when these many Western retailers are using factories in Bangladesh is that many, many of them don't have the real basics like fire escapes or smoke-proof staircases that people can, you know, can run down in the event of a fire. And there was this horrendous fire in Bangladesh back in November, the Tazreen fire, in which 112 workers died. And there weren't fire escapes there. There weren't smoke-proof staircases. Mm-hmm. The fire started on the first floor, and people in the upper floors were, in effect, trapped. They kind of had to run down into the fire in an attempt to escape. So this new plan would require companies, you know, the Western companies that are using a factory, say, that doesn't have a fire escape and that's found to be a violation, to help finance the improvements to really assure fire and building safety.
So you say independent, rigorous inspections are part of this deal. As you read it, is it something that has teeth? Is it something that you see as being transformative in how clothing is manufactured in Bangladesh?
Good question, Anna. I would say it definitely has teeth. Whether it's fully transformative, that's a tougher question. But I think it is a major step forward. The non-government organizations, the labor unions, the anti-sweatshop groups that really pushed the retailers to sign on, you know, they don't want these fake ersatz checklist inspections where you just see if there are one or two smoke detectors on the ceiling. They want really rigorous inspection. When I did a big investigative piece last year about the factory fire in Bangladesh, I was interviewing the head of a major, major worldwide inspection firm, and I said, you didn't even look whether there were whether there was a fire escape at this factory or 112 people died. And he said, well, that's not one of the things we inspect. We inspect to make sure that the sewing machines are far apart. We inspect to make sure there are no fire extinguishers. But they say the whole issue of whether there are fire escapes, that's for the government to inspect. And unfortunately, government regulation inspection in Bangladesh is notoriously lax, and some also say quite corrupt. So some basic things in these non-rigorous inspections like fire escapes and smoke-proof staircases are not even included. And the NGOs, the anti-sweatshop groups that really are pushing for these independent rigorous inspections are going to insist that they're that these inspections have real teeth.
So H&M signed on, along with other clothing manufacturers, signed on to this deal. The Gap has also been targeted by an online petition, but has not. What has the Gap said about this particular deal?
So the Gap says the deal is – the Gap worries about legal liability, Anna. It worries that in America's overly litigious society, it worries that in signing this legally binding enforceable agreement, it might open itself up to all sorts of lawsuits. Again, the non-government organizations, the anti-sweatshop groups that helped craft this, this agreement that a lot of European companies have already signed on to, they say there's really no big worry about all these lawsuits. They say Gap is being paranoid, is overstating its concerns. Gap says we, acting on our own, are doing good things for factory safety. It has hired a former San Diego fire chief to inspect factories in Bangladesh. It says it's going to help lend millions of dollars to factories for fire safety. But again, the anti-sweatshop groups, the NGOs, say we need this comprehensive plan that ultimately dozens of companies, not just H&M and El Corte Inglés, they want dozens of companies to sign on a plan that really works to, lift all these factories up at the same time without one company doing a little of this and one company doing a little of that. It really wants a uniform plan to really help raise the floor in Bangladesh. And Bangladesh has a very low floor, you remember. It has the lowest minimum wage in the world, $37 a month. So a lot of these workers are working 200 hours a month, and they get just $37. And a lot of factories say we can't even afford to improve factory safety and build fire escapes, because they say the Western retailers pay them so little, that give them so little profit per garment, that they can't afford this. And this new plan aims to provide money for real factory improvements and raise prices on goods to help ensure that the garment factories there can begin to pay their workers decently.
So you mentioned the minimum wage of $37 a month. The Bangladeshi government has said it's raising that minimum wage. They've also said they're going to make it easier to unionize. So what should we be paying attention to as far as what's going to create the real change? Should we be looking at what these deals that the manufacturers are signing and inspections that they're agreeing to do? Or should we be looking at the domestic labor laws in Bangladesh as far as what's really has the potential to change things on the ground in those factories?
And kind of all of the above. There were these two bad factory fires in Bangladesh back in 2010. Now we're talking 3 years ago. One where 21 people died, one where 29 people died. And one of those factories is just scarily like the Triangle Shirtwaist fire, where people were literally leaping from the eighth and ninth floors, exactly like the Triangle Shirtwaist fire. And the Bangladesh government, the Western retailers said, this is terrible, this is terrible. We're going to improve factory safety. 3 years have passed and precious little has been done. There was this, horrific, horrendous, historically bad factory collapse on April 24th, where, to the latest count, 1,127 people have died. That has become the real Triangle Fire, kind of the 9/11 for Bangladesh. And even government officials are saying, we really got to finally get serious. And let's hope that they're really getting serious this time, that they're not just mouthing that, well, we're going to raise the minimum wage, we're going to improve factory safety, we're going to make it easier for folks to unionize. A lot of the NGOs say, giving workers the ability to unionize, and then in Bangladesh, unions have really been suppressed. There are 3-4 million garment workers there. There are only, a handful of them are unionized. A well-known labor organizer was murdered last year. But, with the Rana Plaza building that collapsed on April 24th with 1,100 people dying, the day before the collapse, people had seen that some of the pillars of the building were starting to crack, that some of the walls were starting to crack, and they said, this is terrible. And that Tuesday afternoon, a lot of people left the factories because they were scared. The next day, the factory owners ordered them to go back into work, into factories, threatening them that they would lose their jobs if they did not. And some say, if there were a union, the workers might have banded together and said, wait a second, we're not going to do that. That's dangerous. We have families we want to go back to. But I think these workers were so intimidated that they went back, and the result, over 1,100 people have died.
So the other force when you're talking about wages and safety standards in factories is, of course, the threat that the manufacturers will just move somewhere else. And I want to ask you, Adam Davidson has a New York Times column online today that suggests that Bangladesh is actually the end of the line for cheap clothing, what he calls the T-shirt phase, a phase that developing countries go through, starting with England back in the 18th century. But an economist he talked to said that there's no other country to take Bangladesh's place as the lowest cost manufacturing. So have we gotten to the bottom in this, what Adam Davidson characterizes as a race to the bottom?
Sort of. You know, the garment industry is the most mobile industry in the world. You know, all the capital is just, sewing machines. It's not like building an auto plant. So when labor costs got too expensive in China, a lot of apparel companies flocked to Bangladesh, where minimum wage is very low. So Bangladesh might, it's probably going to start raising its wages. It might, press the companies to spend more on factory safety. That will raise costs somewhat. Now, some say, well, now that Burma no longer has a military junta, that might become a place with very low wages that firms will move to. That's possible. But I think, we're approaching the end of the low road. There aren't many places that one could go where there are lower wages. Maybe some firms will decide to try opening up lots of factories in Africa. Some of the poor African countries with low wages don't have the infrastructure that many companies would want. And remember, Adam makes some good points in his article, but, the general thinking is that it really won't cost a substantial amount of money to improve factory safety in Bangladesh. The thinking is it will cost $3 billion, $600 million a year for 5 years to really bring factories up to snuff. When you think that Bangladesh exports about $18, $20 billion in apparel each year, $600 million in additional costs for factory safety would represent just 3% of the $18 billion, just 3% of cost. So that means a T-shirt that that Bangladesh might export for $3, you might just have to increase the price by 3%, which is really less than 10 cents a garment. So I don't think that's the type of major concern and cost that will cause Bangladesh to worry, hey, we're going to lose jobs, lose factories to China or Vietnam or Indonesia or Cambodia.
And we're talking about geography here, but we had someone from Eileen Fisher on the show by chance right after the collapse who spoke about some of the complications of trying to make clothes in a sustainable way, that you might have a label that says made in Italy, but that doesn't rule out that it was made in Italy with trafficked Chinese workers. So have garment workers' rights groups kept up with the realities in the market and all the various ways in which these garments are manufactured?
Well, as many of your listeners know, and we buy goods here in American stores where the wool is from Italy and the sewing is done in Cambodia and maybe the buttons are made in China. So, it's very hard to know. I think the labor rights group, the worker rights groups, try very hard to keep up. It's hard to keep up, but they know that the central locus of the low-cost production where the workers are really paid the least, exploited the most, are the Bangladeshes and the Vietnams and the Cambodias and to some degree Haiti. But there are, I know in Cambodia and Haiti, there are some real efforts to improve factories. The International Labor Organization is working closely with employers who really want to improve things and develop a good, dependable reputation to attract even more apparel companies. And I think some factories are saying by taking a higher road, will attract a certain group of respectable apparel companies like Eileen Fisher that don't want to follow the low road and risk having factory fires that will not only kill workers but will hurt the company's reputation. So I think more and more companies are saying maybe this low road approach is not right for us, not only from a moral point of view but from a reputational point of view.
And finally, Stephen Greenhouse, as a consumer, I went to buy some T-shirts last week and found myself looking at labels and trying to figure out what was the ethical and moral thing to do. As a consumer, what should I do if I want to buy clothes that will improve conditions in Bangladesh?
Well, we reporters at the New York Times are objective and not supposed to give advice. But, just as a thinking person, I would think that if one wants to influence a company and you worry that it's using bad factories in Bangladesh, I think a more powerful statement would be to write to the company, to email the company, and to call the company, and then just to quietly say, you know, walk out of the store and say, I'm not going to buy shirts from that store, because I think not many people are going to notice that. If 20% of Americans stopped, you know, shopping at a certain store because it uses Bangladesh, that might make a statement. That might really influence the company. But I think there are some shoppers who are refraining from buying goods from Bangladesh at Gap or other stores. But I think, you know, it's the drop off in sales because that might be imperceptible. That's why I think if one wants to make a statement, then make a statement. Write an email, make a phone call, write a letter.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. That's Stephen Greenhouse from The New York Times talking about what's changing on the ground in Bangladesh after this terrible manufacturing factory collapse that killed over 1,100 garment workers. Stephen Greenhouse, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to be here, Anna.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC.